Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Royal Watcher podcast. My name is Saad Salman. I am the founder and editor of the Royal Watcher, a royal commentator, and a royal contributor for alt.com.
And my name is Sam Gillespie. I am the editor of the Beaumont. I have a background in fine jewelry and a long-held fascination with history and royalty.
And welcome back to another episode. This week, we're joined by a really special guest. Charlie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm the creator of Not a Royal Expert, which social media account on various platforms, mainly TikTok. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I think me and Sam have been discussing inviting you for the past couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and then we're so happy that it just kind of worked out today.
Yeah.
Perfect. So this time we have kind of lots of stuff to talk about, but we're kind of doing a general recap of the past couple of weeks/months, starting with kind of the biggest royal gathering of the year so far, which was the funeral of King Constantine II of Greece, which had, I believe it was 8 kings and 8 queens and an empress who attended. So a huge royal gathering.
Yeah, we did promise you a full episode on Constantine, but we never got around to it. Maybe, you never know, in the future we could, but yeah, sorry.
And so I think we had everyone from around Europe. I think the Jordanian royal family was there. And the biggest kind of omission was the British royal family, who only sent the Princess Royal and not the king, who was a good friend of King Constantine, or the Prince of Wales, who was the godson of King Constantine. So there were really mixed feelings on that. But I think overall...
I was shocked that we even sent Anne.
Well, actually, I thought because they're so close to the Greeks, and I think the queen attended the weddings of Constantine's children, which were in London, and then they've been just really close with them overall. They're godparents of each other's kids, which is really rare for the Brits. So that was like the only kind of link they had to the foreign royals, and they didn't even honor that, which I kind of thought was rather disappointing.
Yeah, and I mean, I even watched, I was looking back over the pictures before the Queen's funeral, and there's a lovely picture of King Charles with Queen Anne Marie. And, you know, it's obviously it's a picture of two family members consoling each other. And you just think, well, where were you at the funeral? Like,
yeah,
very strange. I mean,
there were so many reasons offered by defenders of the royal family, which was kind of, I think, not justified in that they should have been there and not really any excuse, because everyone else, like, they talk about security and diplomatic protocol and all those things, which really did not make any sense because everyone else was there.
Well, I think they might have shot themselves in the foot going forward when it comes to European relations. So it'd be interesting to see the aftermath of that.
Definitely. I think we did see kind of in the past, if you look at past royal events, damage control, because the Europeans do have a way of clapping back. I think in the 60s, Brits had intended royal events for a while, so no one showed up to Princess Margaret's wedding.
But just because she was marrying Lord Snowden and he wasn't royal?
Well, that wasn't really the case, because when the Duke of Kent married the next year, I think 8 kings and like three kings and like 9 queens showed up.
Yeah, but that was because of Marina.
Yes, but also like it was a bit of a statement, and the same thing kind of happened when Prince Alexander got married. So I feel that then we saw kind of in a clapback, the Queen and Prince Philip attended Queen Juliana's silver wedding anniversary, which was like their like introduction to the foreign royal stage. And that I think was like an effort of, okay, we should try to connect with them more, because it's just kind of inappropriate not to attend those events.
Yeah, well, like I say, going forward, it'd be interesting to see who gets a Christmas card this year.
I mean, they did rush all to the Queen's funeral, so
yeah,
they do still have some kind of standing.
It was definitely funny seeing everybody trying to come up with loads of different excuses as to why the Brits wouldn't have been there. It's always funny to like try and see people's justifications.
Yeah.
There was a full moon, there was an R in the month, they couldn't, you know, couldn't get a babysitter.
I mean, no, people on the defenders, I call them, but they really have some like crazy justifications of stuff that, okay, like I think in general, I speak from, I think the three of us, when I say that we kind of follow the royal family, but we aren't afraid to criticize their wrong moves. So it's that scrutiny is important, and you can't really kind of go along with every single decision they make and say that was the correct one.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that funeral was in January, and then last month they had a memorial service in Athens, which the royal family announced that was going to be a kind of gathering of foreign royals, but we only saw the Spanish royal family through his sister, Queen Sophia, and the Greek royal family. So kind of no more foreign royals. And there was kind of talks of a planned memorial service in London, but Crown Prince Pablo has said that nothing's kind of been planned for that yet.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, we all thought there was going to be a memorial around the time of the coronation, but maybe that's just not going to happen, or... Which is weird, because, you know, they spent sort of the best part of their exile in Britain. So, you know, they must have had friends here and connections and, you know, staff members that worked for them while they were here. Surely they would want to commemorate, you know, the king's life. But, yeah, strange. Maybe they might do something privately. Who knows?
Yeah, I was remembering, I think back in 99, there was a big memorial service for King Hussein of Jordan. And that was the day before Princess Alexia of Greece's wedding. So all the European royals were in town anyway. And they planned that in a sense, so all of them could attend the memorial and then the wedding the next day. Which kind of made sense in a logistical way that they didn't really have to gather some other country for that.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what they're planning to do.
Interesting. Yeah. So this was the main event of last month, and it was really an end to King Constantine's kind of legacy in Greece. I think they've ended everything after that. And that takes us to kind of news in the UK, which began with kind of letters painting announcing the title of the Prince of Wales officially. And then just a few days after that, we got a surprise announcement that the children of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex were going to use their styles of Prince and Princess of Sussex from now on, which they have been legally entitled to do so since September, but they hadn't now for various reasons.
I don't know if I can comment on this without being neutral, so I might just let you two guys talk about it.
Always exciting news in the UK.
Yes. I think let's kind of start with just talking a bit about when they were born. I just found it a very strange decision, using neutral words, and to not allow them to use their courtesy titles, which are Earl and Lady. But now that they're using their princely titles, it kind of just makes it all right, because the official explanation, and one that was repeated by the parents and their spokespeople at the time, even outside the royal family, was they wanted their children to have normal life without any titles or the burden of titles. But now giving them the highest titles they can ever have just kind of relegates all those conversations.
Yeah, and I find it quite odd that they wouldn't take an approach similar to the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh of letting the children decide for themselves when they're old enough. I think it's a very odd decision for them to make it on their children's behalf, when you would expect from what they've said they wouldn't do that. But
yeah, but it's interesting, you know, that, you know, Harry, I mean, granted, he was very high up in the royal family, but, you know, he was quite adamant that being a prince was a handicap for him in life. And, you know, now he wants to give that to his children. So, yeah.
The generational trauma that he called it.
Yeah.
Passing it down.
Especially for children who are so removed from the UK and royal duties and kind of the wider royal family in general, for them to have just these kind of meaningless titles, in a sense, will be even a bigger burden, because they don't have any of the trappings to kind of go to back up any of their titles.
Yeah, I think I remember reading an article from years ago, and it was talking about how sort of just as we've mentioned the Greeks, because the, you know, Crown Princess Marie Chantal is American, and she's based in New York. Prince Dimitri of Yugoslavia, the jewelry designer, he's also based in New York. And it was a whole article about how Americans actually treat royalty. And it's not that they're rude to them or anything, but it's kind of like you say, they don't have the sort of appendages to back it up. So it's a really strange kind of existence. Like, yeah, it looks great on an invitation, but actually, what's, you know, they find it quite weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like playing dress up with their titles.
Yeah.
It's like kind of baseless.
Yeah, and it feels like, I would think that in like a social setting, it would be pretty like awkward to kind of introduce yourself as that. Like, I have a title, but I never use it because I feel totally embarrassed about it, which I'm like, oh, people would think I'm crazy. So I would think, like, especially in a place like LA, to introduce yourself by your title, people would think you're kind of crazy in that sense.
I imagine they just kind of like, oh, that's nice, love. Anyway, carry on.
Carry on. So, and then I think with Lily, she's an American citizen, so there's kind of all legal ramifications about that as well.
Yeah, bless her.
Yeah.
So it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens going forward. But I feel in a sense that this decision was made kind of in tandem because the royal family were about to announce the biggest news, I think, was that Prince Edward has been made the Duke of Edinburgh.
Yeah. Oh,
finally, some good news.
Yeah. It's a strange one, isn't it? Because everyone's been kind of divided on it. And they're like, but they've worked really hard. And Prince Philip wanted him to have the title. I don't understand why it's got these negative connotations. Well, I say that I'm talking about, like, on Twitter, which we all know is a lovely, happy place for the lollipops and puppies. But, yeah.
I mean, I call Twitter people the perpetually aggrieved for a reason. Yeah. Because they'll find something to be mad about any decision at all. So
yeah, but the thing is, I literally just read it before we started the podcast. The Duke of Edinburgh, it's a title. It has no lands. It has no money behind it. It's just literally it's a royal dukedom. It doesn't have anything. You know, there's only been like three before Prince Philip even, so it's not like it's got this ancient history. It's just like a nice title. So just, you know, if you want to be a duke, okay, you can be the Duke of Edinburgh kind of thing. It's not like being the Duke of York or being, you know, the Duke of Gloucester. So yeah, again, the perpetual
exactly.
And the fact that it's only a life kind of title, lifetime title, that's kind of, in a sense, I feel about it two ways. I like that it's setting a precedent because I feel that in the future, kind of the important like royal dukedoms like York, Gloucester, Kent, they really kind of should have been for life because that way they kind of remain with the main royal family and like the princess royal, that sort of title where it remains with the title holder and then it doesn't really pass on and leave the royal family. So that way I feel this is a good way to maintain that Edinburgh title because it is the place of the capital of Scotland, so it's a major kind of location in that sense that they should control, they should kind of have that and retain them in the royal family. But I also had hope that this would be an opportunity for the king to create a title with kind of equal succession and allow Lady Louise to succeed to the Edinburgh title while James would get the Wessex title. And this would start the new trend, especially among the wider aristocracy, and kind of change their succession laws.
Yeah.
As like, there's been bills in Parliament to do that for a while, but they never really get too far.
Yeah, the only thing is, if they did that, it would, like you say, it would kind of like defeat the object of the slimmed down monarchy, because then it, you know, you'd end up like Queen Victoria's family before World War One, just like who's royal, like there'd be just way too many princes and princesses and dukes and duchesses and earls and everything. But there was that really weird rumor, wasn't there, that Princess Charlotte was going to get it to honor the queen, because technically the queen before she became the queen was the Duchess of Edinburgh. But I don't recall, and I love watching those old Pathé films from like the 50s. I don't recall the Queen ever being referred to as the Duchess of Edinburgh, even though she was.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how Charlotte would have been, you know, and one, Charlotte will end up becoming the Princess Royal, which is the title given to the eldest female of the king, a female child of the king. But yeah, so I don't know where they got that from.
But I mean, people did believe it. If you take a look at my comments, and every kind of other comment was, yes, Charlotte will get the title. That's why they didn't give it to him kind of for his heirs as well, which I kind of found that a bit strange. But I like that, in a sense, one way that all of these dukedoms are being given, because they could have not given it all and kind of stopped it, but that they're changing it up and there's no kind of set rules preventing them. Because in the past, this used to happen as well, that Queen Victoria gave a couple of I think dukedoms to her aunts and stuff, which were only for life and didn't really move forward. So this is using past presidents without kind of complicating things.
Yeah, and especially seeing as, you know, the, what was it, after, you know, 1999, where the hereditary peers lost a lot of places in the House of Lords. I think if the king was to go around creating titles now, it would look very bad.
Definitely. So this was, I think, I really like Charlie, a few days before, the day before when they announced the Sussex title, you posted, I think, on Twitter and a couple of places calling Sophie the Duchess of Edinburgh. And then it happened the next day. I was like,
yeah, I posted on my Instagram story. I was like, look at what the Duchess of Edinburgh's done today. And then I had to clarify. I was like, I'm joking. I'm just manifesting. And then the next day it was announced. I was like, perfect. This is brilliant.
You should have put a bet on, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was kind of scheduling my articles and using the Earl of Wessex title in that the day before, and I was like, yeah, I have a feeling they might announce it, but I also don't want to really jump the gun because I went the moment they announced the Sussex stuff, and then I was looking at, okay, yeah, it's Edward's birthday in 2 days. So I think this is like a prelude to announcing that without having any backlash on the Sussex titles. So this is kind of tying everything up neatly.
Yeah.
I think, like, overall, this was, Twitter aside, this news was very well received. I think whenever I talk about titles, it's very mixed. But when I shared this news on my other socials, it was very, very well received. I don't think I've actually seen a single negative comment, which is very, very, very rare. That very rarely happens. I don't think I've actually seen anybody, Twitter aside, complaining about this.
Yeah, well, I think people probably don't recall. I mean, it was years and years ago. But, you know, when they first started out, Sophie and Edward, they did have a little bit of a scandal because, you know, they had a television company and, you know, we're seeing echoes of that now. But, you know, once it sort of blew up in their faces, they really just knuckled down and they started doing all the work that, you know, it's not glamorous being a member of the British royal family, especially if you're sort of lower down the pecking order. But they did. They went and did they opened the sports centres. They went to, you know, the hospitals and, somewhere out in the rain in the middle of nowhere to cut a ribbon. And they really just knuckled down and just, you know, that whole sort of sense of duty really, you know, they really started to sort of personify it. So, yeah, I'm glad they got the title. They clearly, you know, clearly worked for it and they actually, you know, get what it's all about.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, and I think there was some, again, on Twitter who were making a big deal about, oh, how Edward and Sophie aren't really the most well-known and how their latest tour didn't get that much coverage and use that kind of an excuse of why they shouldn't have gotten a title. But I think with that, there was some interesting kind of videos and stuff I saw that basically that their tour was kind of undercovered on purpose because they didn't really want to create that. Just start do their work without any of the kind of media storm that went with their last Caribbean tour. So this, they purposely went under the radar just so they could have a smooth and efficient tour, do their work without getting involved in any of the drama.
Well, that's it, isn't it? And that's, you know, at the end of the day, as much as, yes, we love a little bit of drama, but after a while, it's just exhausting. And it's like, just get on with it. And that's what they do.
Exactly. Yeah, it's refreshing.
Yeah,
it is, definitely. And then there's another thing that I think could have been a bit of a valid point is that when the Queen passed away and they could have announced Edinburgh title back then, there was still kind of rising support for independence in Scotland at the time. And then in the past kind of few weeks or so, it's been in a bit of a kind of steady decline. So that is why it would have caused a bigger fuss if they had announced it back in September versus announcing it now when it's kind of just escaped everyone's notice because they're busy with other stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So interesting developments and nice to see that Edward is included in the Royal Dukes now. And yeah, I think Charlie, you shared a video of him in Edinburgh on the day it was announced and he was saying, "My wife, the Duchess," which I thought was very sweet.
Oh, he was over the moon. You could just tell.
Definitely. So
remind me again why he didn't. Why didn't he get the title when he married? Remind me.
I think because Philip held it, and
why didn't he get a dukedom in general? Why was he created the Earl of Wessex and not, like, I don't know, like the Duke of Clarence or something?
I think didn't he just choose it because he liked it?
Yeah, because he liked the whole, he was into history and wanted the Wessex title because it was the ancient, but the Tweed didn't want to make him Duke of Wessex because that was kind of creating something new. And then there's that whole Edinburgh mess. Also, at the same time, he wasn't a working royal and he was expected to continue kind of normal life. So making him, because an earl, like the same way she made Tony Snowden an earl was that she wanted, he wasn't going to be a working royal. He was going to continue his work as a photographer. And same way Edward was going to be an earl because he was going to continue his own stuff without, and dukedom was kind of only reserved for people who were going to become working royals. So that may be kind of the main reason why.
Okay, cool. That explains
kind of my hypothesis rather than there being actual fights. So on that same note, talking about the British royals, this, I think at the start of the month, the Norwegian Crown Prince and Crown Princess were on a business promotion visit to the UK, which was originally scheduled for the week of the Queen's death. And they canceled that, I think it was the 10th and the 11th of September, and instead was rescheduled to the 1st and 2nd of March. So they had a kind of roundtable conference with the Prince and Princess of Wales at Windsor Castle. There was a business conference and a kind of grand Norwegian gala dinner as well.
Oh, okay. Cool, but no tiaras.
No tiaras. It was a fairly informal visit, I'm afraid. And we might see them back in London for the coronation. So yeah, hopefully they bring the tiara then. But knowing her tiaras are pretty small, I wouldn't count on it being a pretty memorable occasion.
Yeah, but you know, I'll settle for the Daisy Bando. I'm not, it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be the emerald one.
Well, actually, the emerald has been worn to the past, like, 4 British coronations. So I would hope that she might, because it was worn by Crown Princess Martha to the 1937 and the 53 coronations, and then by Crown Princess Margrethe of Sweden, who learned it from the Swedish Queen at the time for the 1911 coronation.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
Okay. There's a bit of precedence of her to wear it now, but who knows if they're going to honor that or not.
Oh.
Probably not.
Well, I'll maybe the hope.
Yes. Interesting event. From one side is that the Prince and Princess of Wales are welcoming royals, kind of officially, and then at Windsor Castle, of all places, which means they are, I think we've increasingly see them using it as their office rather than just kind of a secondary residence, because there's no one really lives there now. So it's nice to see it being used.
Yeah.
So, and the meeting they had was with representatives from leading Norwegian business working on green energy solutions. So very much kind of working on stuff that the four of them already do champion.
Yeah, I think that's been quite a big pattern with a lot of the royal visits that we've seen lately. They've all been very green business centered, which has been interesting to see.
Definitely, yeah. I think this is an interesting trend that we're seeing, and I think we'll continue to see going forward. As have they announced the location of the next first shot prize yet?
Not to my knowledge, but I'm not even going to ask.
Yeah, no. I remember something about them kind of involving, because Crown Prince of Victoria of Sweden works a lot in the environmental sector as well. Now I'm singing like they, and so do the Danes. So it'll be interesting how kind of they are able to combine their working. This may be the way they're going to be connected to the European royals rather than in those official visits with tiaras that we would have seen in the years past.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's an evolution of the institution going forward.
Yeah, which is kind of an interesting direction for it to take than what we would have generally perceived.
Yeah, but I think people, weird thing is, people do forget, you know, how much King Charles is how much of an environmentalist he is and has been for sort of, you know, the past 40 years, you know, not just with his organic farming, but also with, you know, he built a whole town down in Cornwall called Poundbury that's completely ecologically sound. And, you know, it's all about working with the environment and making sure that, you know, they've got solar power and it's not, you know, it's very pedestrianized. So I think going forward, that's definitely going to be a big theme with his reign.
Definitely. And I think this is one of those kind of a lot of people online, especially, do like to point out the roles of, are really out of touch in places. And I think that's one of those things that are so relevant and keeping them so connected to the really current problems and the challenges the world is facing. The roles that are at the forefront of this kind of tackling to solutions to climate change.
Yeah, well, it is the hot topic at the moment, isn't it? So, yeah.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
with the royals, they definitely keep it in focus kind of all the time as compared to politicians who do kind of put on the back burner at times. But interesting trip this, and then kind of a similar environmental theme on the Danish Crown Prince couple's visit to India, which came just a few days after Queen Margrethe's back surgery. So we saw the Crown Prince as regent for a few days, and then they went off to India. I think it was a 5-day trip, and they were, while they were gone, his aunt was the regent, and then he's been regent ever since they came back. So pretty critical time, but I think must have been planned quite a long time ago.
It's nice to see a happy royal couple in front of the Taj Mahal, I must say.
Definitely, they did take that iconic photo. And then they have an interesting kind of itinerary. I kind of covered it all at the end, but so the Taj Mahal and the visit to Agra was on day one. And then on day two, for those watching online on YouTube, you can see on the right, there's a picture of them attending this grand gala dinner, again, with the Danish business delegation. So I think one thing we don't really see in British royal visits is that they are involved in kind of promoting their country from an economic point of view, which the Scandinavian and the Dutch couples really, they take business delegations, they take companies, leaders to other countries, and their visits have a very practical purpose in which they try to create trade deals and have conferences and really create connections with the country they're visiting on more than like a soft power, superficial level. And the royals take care of kind of the ceremonial stuff. They have a look over all the aspects of what the business deals are doing, but it's really them leading an entire delegation, which I find such a kind of refreshing way for state visits to be done, which we don't really see that much in the UK.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I wonder why we don't do that. Would it
Yeah,
be,
it'd definitely be interesting to see that.
yeah, would it be seen as interfering? I mean, do we know that they don't do that? Do we not, you know, maybe
I
they
mean,
turn up
yeah.
and they're in the back somewhere.
I think definitely in the UK, if our royals openly did that, I don't think it'd be very well received. I feel like people would see it as meddling.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to make Prince Andrew the a British business delegate, and that, you know, that was a dumpster fire and a half.
I mean, for all his faults, I've never really seen anyone say anything bad about the business deal aspect of it. So maybe he was successful for a while.
Oh yeah, I'll give you some threads on Reddit.
I mean, actually, my cousin once met him on a visit to Indonesia, and she presented flowers to him, which she only told me that like a few months ago. And I was like, "You've never told me that information." Like, we talk to each other every week.
Well, there was that
But
whole thing
I
about
didn't.
you know, when they were trying to save the royal yacht, Britannia, they were saying that, you know, as much as it was a sort of a family holiday home for them, a lot of the drinks parties that would happen on there were business meetings. And again, that might have been like a soft power play as opposed to, you know, just openly go. I mean, oh, do you know what? You're talking about that now. There was something I was reading the other day about Fergie and Andrew. They went to like the US in the like late 80s, and they did a campaign, and it was like supposed to be like buy British, and
Yes,
everyone was just like
I posted
this.
on that tour because it was a 35th anniversary. I think that's where you must have seen it because I
Yeah,
did a whole
usually whenever I see something sad, it's you've posted it. So, but wasn't the
article
whole back thing like there was a big backlash? Like, God, this is so tacky, and I mean like. Maybe it was just because of the
I'll
tabloids of the
read you
day.
what they called it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tab. I think the British tabloids were not too happy, but when I posted, so like the comments of the British tabloids were that it was called as a brash, vulgar, excessive, weak-humored exhibition by two royals.
Yeah, this is why we
So
don't
they
do
were
that.
holding back. And then when I posted those comments on Instagram and on Twitter and stuff, right? Oh, we don't remember it like that. It was so refreshing, especially the Americans were like, oh, we loved having Fergie here because she kind of did ridiculous things. I think she wore like American flags in her hair and LA hats, which I mean, we would kind of consider tacking up. That was peak Fergie. So
that was, yeah.
And yeah. I think that was called the Buy British Tour. They attended a bunch of kind of supermarkets where they were selling British stuff, and they was one or two conferences. But again, that was more of like, they do talk about royal soft power. And then we don't really see any practical application of that. Whereas in this way, the royals do have a practical role. So the crown prince will give a speech at the opening of a conference. And that is kind of the way they do things, but they don't really have a practical role in the negotiation, and they're just kind of figureheads. They have their own separate agenda, like Mary was dealing with her charitable stuff, Frederick was doing work on his environmental issues, and then they kind of hosted the business delegates, they attended a conference or two, and it was very much a practical application of royal soft power, more than we would see in the UK, because similarly, the Swedish crown princely couple, they also did a business visit to Australia and New Zealand, I think, which is also a few weeks ago. So that's something they just do. And we just saw the Norwegians said that as well to the UK. So it's something that they do very practically, whereas the British do much more of a ceremonial visit than have any kind of practical solutions after that.
Maybe we could take some notes then.
Put which is more use.
Definitely. And that's where I think looking at this environmental aspect, I think that's where we're seeing a bit of change happening in the royals, the way the royals are carrying out their duties these days. And a big kind of aspect has to do with the fact that we haven't really had a formal state visit, outgoing state visit from the UK for a couple of years, and until the end of this month, of course. But state visits usually have that ceremonial aspect. And I mean, in Scandinavia, that's what the heads of state do as well. But we see the crown princely couples, they take the role of these, what they call business visits rather than official visits or royal tours, as the British media refers to kind of their overseas visits. So this business visit has much more kind of practical application. So this week we saw the Dutch royals going on a state visit to Slovakia, which was, I mean, pretty normal, standard kind of republic state visit stuff, nothing too exciting for us, except when Queen Maxima wore this Jan Temenau gown, I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, with the Dutch emerald tiara, her emerald earrings, the Dutch emerald necklace, and this like emerald bracelet, which is not in this scene. But this gown has been worn for 3 state banquets already, and each time with the same tiara. So, I mean, like that she's recycling, but maybe I think this is taking it a bit too far.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, our favorite Maxima, this is how you do a visit. This is how you do a state visit, everyone. You bring out the good stuff.
Exactly. Queen Camilla, take note.
Yes.
Yes. Something other than Belgian sapphires next time, please. Yes.
Please. I mean, I'm kind of rooting, secretly hoping that we're going to see the Oriental circlet and the Burmese ruby, because both Germany and France have red sashes. So I kind of want to see both the ruby tiaras. But that's kind of, I call it first if anyone, if she does. Queen Camilla, if you're listening, those are my choices. Definitely. So what do you both think about this look in overall?
She never looks bad, does she?
No.
Definitely.
She'd look great on a bag note.
Last year I did this whole kind of, I talked with someone about how Maxima never really repeats her state banquet looks, because it makes it much easier for kind of future historians, in a sense, look back and be like, okay, yeah, she wore this gown, this tiara. We can pinpoint the location, the date, everything from that. But because, in a sense, she's repeating her looks down to the same tiara and stuff, that it makes it much harder, because especially in the close-up shots, it's more difficult to date stuff like this. That's kind of my kind of one kind of gripe about it. Otherwise, I like this. It's a really nice gown. Appropriate choice for this sort of visit.
Yeah, and was it like a another visit to encourage trade?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and it was like another green business situation.
Cool.
Green business and press freedom. Oh. Those were the two main things. I think they had like 3 conversations with the press about freedom, and I think there was some Dutch reporter commenting in which they're like, oh yeah, you, it's getting a bit too excessive. Stop talking about press freedom already.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It was like, I think they had like 4 engagements on the first date just about press freedom. So I was like, that's a bit too much, I think.
So I assume that they're pro freedom of speech with the press.
Definitely.
Right. Okay. But so what's, I why would the press Slovakia hate that?
I think Slovakia is a country that's only 30 years old and doesn't necessarily have kind of longstanding democratic institutions kind of protect stuff like that. So there was a bit of kind of elitism going on, which some Slovakian people not really appreciate. So there's a bit of controversy, but not like too apparent to make it into the foreign press.
Oh, okay.
Mm. But I think Queen Maxima and her jewels kind of burned out. I think the next stage, the Dutch royals hosted a reception or something, and she wore a big diamond revere and some diamond ears in her hair, but kind of just saw one picture of that somewhere.
Yeah.
So she did bring her jewels, kind of smooth things along, which is how, what queens should do. And then the big news, which is actually currently happening right now as we're recording, is the wedding of Princess Iman of Jordan. And earlier this week, Queen Rania released a kind of this Instagram reel of her daughter wearing her diamond tiara, which Queen Rania had only worn once back, actually two times back in 2000, for a state visit to UK and a portrait taken back then. And everyone had really assumed that it was just a loan from the jewelers. So to see Iman wearing that for this portrait meant that there might have be a chance that she wear it on her wedding day. However, as we can now know, Iman did not wear that tiara on her wedding day, and she's wearing something totally different.
How strange. I mean, why would you put out a picture of her wearing a tiara only for her not to... I thought it was weird that they put it out with her wearing the tiara before she got married. It's like, isn't it supposed to be a surprise on the day? So maybe we've missed something. Maybe it's a tradition.
Queen Rania clickbaiting the wedding.
Possibly.
Definitely. I think Sam would like to include kind of some bits of the henna party that they had at the same time, but it looked such a vibrant culture event, but really Rania made it out into something so kind of special, and they're really showcasing Jordan and Jordanian culture alongside all of their traditions, which I found was a very kind of interesting way of looking at the wedding. And this sets a general theme of how the Jordanian royal wedding of her brother will be later this year, in which in the past Jordanian royal weddings were really more personal private affairs, but this, they really are trying to showcase a different image of Jordan to the entire world.
Wait, hold on a minute. Wasn't Rania's wedding, didn't they ride through the streets on a Cadillac, but yeah, they were like sitting up in a car, weren't they? That wasn't quiet.
Yeah. What, at the time, he was just like the son of a king, not a current prince, that's everything. True. But that was like, it wasn't necessarily like widely covered in the international press, that sort of thing. Whereas this, like, I found it, the way they're kind of promoting this wedding, especially Rania talking about it on television and everything, this wedding and the wedding of her brother, the Crown Prince, they are setting a kind of new tone for Jordanian royal weddings and presenting a new image of Jordan to the world.
Okay. I mean, I've never thought Jordan had a bad image, other than that scandal with the money. Was it the Panama Papers?
Yes. And there was another scandal, but I should not.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming back to me now.
Yes. There was a Rania clothing scandal, which my friends at UFO No More know a bit too much about, but that's all I can say about that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yes. So, but this is like, so what do you think about Iman's wedding look?
Love that you ask like I have any, like, okay, I'll the tiara, I'll go with what I know. I don't like it. It's too small. Fair enough, they can't have anything ostentatious, and the Jordanian tiara collection isn't the most extensive. And I think we had a theory that the, which queen was it? Is it Queen Noor or the Queen Aaliyah's Cartier tiara, which I would say was the oldest, might be stuck in Dubai. We don't have confirmation, but...
Yeah, But we kind of do have confirmation because Princess Haya got like received $15 million from her ex-husband in lieu of the jewelry that she left behind in Dubai. So,
but did they say the tiara was part of that?
No, but they just said jewelry in general. And I mean, if I was fleeing for my life, I would probably not be, well, I probably would be running to the bank to get my tiara, but
I don't know. I mean, it's not like she ran off with the clothes on her back, was it?
Yeah. Well, actually, she kind of did run off with the clothes on her back.
Yeah. But also, I mean, that particular tiara as well, Queen Aaliyah, it's a different wife, isn't it? Because King Hussein had four wives.
So Queen Aaliyah was his third wife, and Abdullah is the son of the second wife, Princess Muna, who was British kind of wife.
She's from Sus. I can't get over the fact that, what's her name? Tony. She's from Sussex. Tony. She's from Suffolk. Yeah.
So, I mean, fairly normal. And she had, I think, three tiaras, but her daughters wore some of them in the 90s, but never really seen again. And then this is kind of an interesting situation where we see them getting a new tiara for Princess Iman, because Queen Rania really has that bracelet tiara. And until we saw that image of Iman last week in the diamond tiara, we kind of didn't think she had that either. So it's interesting to see kind of what will her sister-in-law wear at her wedding.
Because I think she wears the Arabic one. I do like that one, the diamond Arabic scroll tiara. I don't know if they own it or if it was rented, but it was a pretty tiara.
Yeah, and I mean, she's also like a member of the Saudi royal family from her mother's side and filthy rich, so she could get a new tiara like she Iman. Could.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the one that Iman's wearing is a new tiara, and you know, I'm biased, but they're not substantial. You know, that just looks like it would snap in two.
Definitely. I think the first words you're seeing, it might be a Chaumet piece that's been modified, but not my favorite. I think it's trying to be a fringe tiara, but it's failing.
But that's the thing. Fringe tiaras need to be, you know, like the Alexandra Kokoschnik. There needs to be a wall of diamonds to work, and that's not working.
What do you think, Charlie, about the wedding and kind of what we've seen so far in clips and things?
I think everything looks very, very nice. Very modern. I was shocked by the size of the cake. I don't know if you've seen it yet. I was just looking at it alongside on Twitter. Very big cake, cut it with a sword. Who doesn't love a royal wedding? I mean, I don't know a lot about the fashion and the jewels, but it all looks nice.
Definitely. And I think one thing I haven't seen so far, but we did expect, was we might get some foreign royals. But so far, the only kind of foreign-ish royal we've gotten is who's now Princess Miriam of Jordan, but she used to be the ex-crown princess of Bulgaria. So she's now Jordanian royal, but I did expect Queen Sophia of Spain because she attends every single royal event. I think she even attended the wedding of one of Iman's cousins, whose like father was just a minor prince. So
maybe they're gearing up for the crown prince's wedding. Like,
yeah, hopefully we see William there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, after my disappointment at the Greek funeral, I wouldn't count on it.
Oh yes, let's not hold our breath.
I would be happy if they do, but let's not be too hopeful.
Keep the expectations low.
Well, maybe the new Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh can go.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, when Iman's cousin, the Prince Rashid of Jordan, got married in 2011. There were three kings and five queens, including the Duke of Edinburgh. There was Queen Sophia, Queen Anne Marie. I think Empress Farah was there. And so there was big kind of royal gathering. So, I mean, the Jordanians do have lots of nice connections with royalty abroad.
Okay.
If all else fails, they'll probably just send Anne.
Yes. The Anne won't give us the nice fashion and the jewels that we really want, so... Sorry, Anne, we love you. Definitely. So what were your kind of general thoughts on the happenings of the past few weeks, Charlie?
Oh, bit of a roller coaster. I'm glad that it ended on a high note with the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh, but it's definitely been a interesting, active few weeks.
Yes, and I think in the kind of weeks leading up to the coronation, especially in the UK, it's very active. I think we have Commonwealth Day tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they just announced a few kind of new stuff for coronation stuff. There's going to be a garden party at Buckingham Palace on May 3rd and the 9th of May, so just right before and right after. Then there's going to be a reception for Commonwealth leaders at the palace on May 5th, which is the day before the coronation. And in the evening, there'll be a reception for world leaders at Buckingham Palace, which I have a feeling may be like the one held for the heads of state ahead of the Queen's funeral. But I mean, we can hope that it may have tiaras and stuff, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting to see. It's still loads of information coming out about it. I'm like, how much more coronation news can they release? It
Oh,
just feels like
it's
nonstop, but
gonna be
I'm here for it.
Crazy.
It's
I mean,
going
there's
to be
so much that they
huge.
should release because they haven't really announced much, especially in regards to the guest list, whether they'll be wearing robes and coronets and that sort of stuff.
Oh, no, he has to. He can't turn up to
The
Westminster
guest
in a
list
morning
is going to
suit.
be interesting.
Yes. And like, will they be wearing tiaras or not? Like, will Camilla be the only one like in a crown and sort of thing? And the rest of them are just in like.
Oh, no, they can't do that.
Dresses.
They can't
yeah.
do that.
That would break my heart, I'm afraid.
There's going to be a fine line with how much they scale it back, and I really hope they don't do it too much.
Hopefully, yeah. But we've seen.
Otherwise,
kind of,
what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point of spending all this money on a coronation if they can't even wear the jewels they have in the vault, basically?
Yeah, give us something nice to look at.
Yeah.
Yes, it's kind of grim on this little island right now.
So, Charlie, what are your plans for the coronation itself? Are you going to be in London?
I will not be in London because I will be having a party. So that is my plan. I was debating.
Idea.
I was like, should I stay at home? Should I stay at home for a party? Should I go to London? But you know what? Let's throw a party.
You having a street party or just a
I'll be doing
barbecue?
That. We were contemplating it, and we thought if it's a street party, then we can't really control who we invite. So let's just keep it as a house party, and then, you know, if there are people that we don't want there, then we can control that.
Fair enough. I
We're
bet you
being
any money
such
there
will an open, loving community.
There'll be street parties up and down the country, I reckon.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious about how they'll be showing it, and like, especially in London, because I'll be in London, but will there be big screens kind of all around showing all
yeah.
the ceremony, or will it be more of a...
No, there'll be
like
big screens,
Park.
Everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
I think
I
they've
mean,
got to, because even with like the Queen's funeral, there was just not enough space for everybody to see what was going on. They've got to have the screens there for people
definitely.
To go to the parks and stuff.
Yeah. I think I do enjoy kind of covering, because I have to cover all the coronation live. So I'm more worried about having everything done kind of in quick succession and having it done efficiently. And when you're in the crowd, you can't necessarily kind of take your laptop out and be covering from live feed and screenshots and stuff and posting it. So I'm would much rather kind of have an experience where I can kind of do both, be present but also not kind of be so behind on my work, because I am kind of going on a business for this. So hopefully it'll work out.
Yeah.
So Charlie, where can everyone find you on social media?
I am at Not a Royal Expert everywhere. If I have an account on some social media, it'll be that. So Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, nothing on YouTube yet, but there is a channel there. So
perfect. No, I will have all the links in the descriptions on all the streaming platforms on YouTube and also on the Royal Watcher website.